Now we go out to the phone lines here. Dan Lobby, Cleveland.com. Thanks for taking a couple minutes for us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it, as always. So, Scott McLuhan, what do we know? What do we need to know? And obviously, when you have top talent, you seem to go after and acquire it. And this is another smart move for John Dorsey, or so it seems.
Yeah, John Dorsey is just loading his front office up with people that he's come across during his career, guys who have that heavy background in scouting. This is sort of what we expected when he took the job, that he was going to go after sort of the older school guys, or guys that at least have an older school approach to kind of scouting and picking and drafting players. And this is just another guy in that line of hires by John Dorsey. And, you know, you were praising it. I like the hire as well. This is a guy that has a lot of experience. He'll be here to at least help with the draft. You know, I'm not sure what his role will be after that, but it's not a bad thing to add more experience like this.
Is it safe to say this is something that, because John Dorsey's been in the league so long, that this is the positives, the upgrades that having someone like John Dorsey gives you over Asashi Brown?
Yeah, I think so, as long as he hires the right people. You know, I think we saw it with Mike Holmgren when he was here, that, you know, he used his connections to hire a bunch of people that had the same agent as him, and that didn't quite work out. So as long as you hire the right people, and you're hiring people, you know, it can absolutely work. And that's certainly what everyone is hoping that John Dorsey's network is creating here.
Is there any concern about confirmation bias where, you know, you read some of the reports with Scott McLuhan, and before he got this gig, he was very high on Baker Mayfield. John Dorsey hasn't really been openly high on many players, but has voiced the support for Baker Mayfield in the amount of games he's gone to, and that one game he watched against Kansas, that would, you would have acted like he saw the Super Bowl there. is there anything to worry about with that, or is it just he's just that good at talent evaluation, so we just take his word for it and we move on?
You know, I could see some concern there, but I think you hope that there's enough voices in that room, and you know, including Alonzo Highsmith, Elliot Wolf, Andrew Berry, guys like that. You hope there's enough voices in that room that you're not just going to get everyone. I mean, I guess you kind of want everyone singing from the same hymnal as Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine like to say, but you don't want it to be just because. Like you said, that confirmation bias. I think there's enough voices that they're going to be able to come to a consensus, but it's not going to be just because everybody, you know, gets along and agrees on everything.
Is there any background on Scott McLuhan that you've, as you start to dive into him and figure out what he is? To me, it sounds like he was more along the John Dorsey line of things, where, you know, he's just a great talent evaluator, but maybe shouldn't have been a GM, and ran into some of his problems in the past, maybe creeped up on him once again in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, you have those personal problems that he had, so some alcohol issues that he was getting treatment for, and it just really affected his ability to be a general manager, as I've kind of read up on him, and as I kind of remember his time in Washington as well. You see some of that stuff. So this is probably a really good role for him to kind of work his way back into a front office and maybe eventually work his way back up to one of those top positions. But, you know, I think he's in the right spot because he's in here, he's consulting. You know, again, I don't know what his role will be after the draft, if there is a role for him after the draft. So I think this is really a good setup for him personally and professionally right now.
The one audio clip that I played there coming out of the break was him talking about how Kirk Cousins isn't special. And he mentions how, you know, McLuhan's been around Favre, he's been around Russell Wilson, but ultimately Kirk Cousins wasn't anything really to write home about. Does that mean we can end all of the speculation about Kirk Cousins? Can we stop it, Dan?
We might be able to. Again, I don't know that McLuhan's going to have final say on that, but Kirk Cousins is going to be really expensive. We know that. He's going to – I mean, there's a chance it could be a Matthew Stafford type of contract. They actually have nearly identical numbers over the last 3 years, so it could very much be a Matthew Stafford type contract. If you sign Kirk Cousins, you're signing him to be the guy for the next 3, 4, 5 years. It changes the way you draft. So if you don't think his ceiling is – franchise quarterback, guy that can lead you not just to the playoffs but also beyond, you kind of hedge at that and you go the draft route and you go the bridge quarterback route, which is kind of the way I think they've been leaning anyway. I don't know how in the cards Kirk Cousins was to begin with.
Fair enough. You can follow him on Twitter. He is at Dan_Lobby, LABBE. Joining me, Jonathan Peterlin, here on The Fan. Switching to the Super Bowl and some of the storylines out of today, I don't know where you fall on the Tom Brady GOAT storyline and career arc, but would today, with everything that's been around this Patriots team, the EEI story, you know, the Alex Guerrero part of things, the fact that their defense was hot garbage for the first 5 weeks of the year, everything around it, would this be Tom's greatest Super Bowl victory, even just eclipsing the 28-3 we saw last year, if he's able to close it out today?
You know, I don't know if it would be his greatest. I do think, you know, it would be in the discussion. I think if, you know, this is nothing against the Eagles, but you are, you know, you are playing a backup quarterback who's been very good to this point. I think maybe that dampens the excitement for the game a little bit and the accomplishment a little bit, but that's a very good defense he's going to be going against. You know, the thing that impresses me is he's done this with Julian Edelman out all year. He's kind of had to be the guy that's just put this team on his back and carried them as he has before. So I don't know if this would be his greatest Super Bowl win, but it would certainly, it does feel like it would be, you know, I know there was that ESPN reporter that said maybe Belichick and Brady would consider retiring after this game. This does feel like this could be, at the very least, the cap of a career, whether it ends after this game or not. This is sort of the culmination and the march for him.
One thing I'm really impressed by with the Eagles and this team more than anything else is you go through and you look, they got Alshon Jeffrey, you get Patrick Robinson, LeGarrette Blount, Jordan Matthews, Jay Ajayi, I mean, on and on, Ronald Darby. The list just keeps going, and it just doesn't seem to end. And this all happened post-Carson Wentz in moving into year two of their new quarterback and getting everything structured and everything around him. It really set up, if Nick Foles needed to be in, you could still succeed. Obviously, this would be a good blueprint for the Browns. Is this some sort of line of attack that they'd be looking at going, or are they just going to quietly assemble piece by piece by piece? When they do get their franchise quarterback, it's already constructed.
I think it's going to be a little bit of both because, you know, obviously with that number one pick this year, they're going to want to pick a guy that is their franchise quarterback, whether he plays right away or whether he's a year or two off. They want to pick the guy that's going to be their quarterback. And that being said, with all the resources they have the ability to continue to surround him. They already have a strong offensive line. They've got the ability to go out and add some more weapons offensively. I think Philadelphia does offer a little bit of a blueprint, though. You know, they kind of simultaneously found their quarterback, but also were already building and then continued to build after they found him. And that's really what you have to do.
Eagles fans playing with house money today. If you're an Eagles fan, do you feel like, hey, maybe I'm good regardless? We weren't supposed to win with Nick Foles. We're going up against the Patriots dynasty. Anything that happens is good?
You know, it's easy to say that, but I've got to say, once you get to this point, and it's so hard to actually get to the Super Bowl, I'm sure it's easy to say that, you know, we are playing with house money and whatever. It's just Nick Foles. But, man, you've had 2 weeks of hype for this. You're coming off a game where you absolutely smoked a really good Minnesota team and a really good Minnesota defense. I'm sure they've talked themselves into this, and I don't think it'll be any less of a letdown if they lose this game.
Let me just have you project out, because, I mean, this is what you do for a living. You're very good at it. If Nick Foles wins today, maybe his price doesn't change, but what would it cost? And if the Browns are looking for someone in that area, maybe a Case Keenum, maybe a Sam Bradford, to bridge that year for whoever they take number one overall, is that interest, or is that something that it would just be too expensive?
You know, I don't think anything is going to be too expensive. Well, you know, I said Kirk Cousins might be too expensive. But as far as a bridge quarterback is concerned, I don't know if there's going to be too high of a cost. But I think Philadelphia, I mean, unless Nick Foles absolutely said that he didn't want to come back as a backup, I think they would be smart to hang on to a guy like that. Keep him around. You don't know. Carson Wentz is coming off an ACL. You don't know how long that recovery is actually going to take. So, you know, he certainly should be a guy the Browns look at if he becomes available. I do think he'll be costly because of what he's done in this playoff run. But, yeah, I would be a little surprised if Philadelphia just kind of let him walk unless he kind of forced his way out.
Yeah, you had your bet just in case the same thing happens and maybe Carson Wentz is more injury prone than maybe you let on. All right, Dan, I've been doing prop bets every single segment throughout the entirety of the show. For this segment, this is the one that pops up. What color will Pink's hair be when she starts to sing the national anthem?
Oh, what color will Pink's hair be? You know, I don't even know what color her hair is right now.
Nobody does. That's the beautiful part about it. Like, nobody does. Like, she just changes it.
I think she's going to go with a blue.
Blue? Okay. All right. Your money.
Yeah.
Your hard money's on blue. I like that.
Let's go with a blue.
One of the more controversial ones we've been doing all day was, will Pink show cleavage at all when she's doing the national anthem? Easy money on yes there. Like,
I think that's a no-brainer.
I mean,
that's not even off the board.
Right. Like, it's big time stage, big time show. This is as big as it gets. It's Super Bowl. She has to be showing cleavage in one way or another. Dan, I appreciate the time as always. Kent State's finest. Dan Lobby here on 92.3 The Fan. We'll catch up with you down the road. Enjoy the game tonight, man.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Dan Lobby, Cleveland.com. Always does great work. Make sure to check him out on Twitter. He is @Dan_LABBE.